SpongeBob.
Why is SpongeBob ready?
Because he says, I'm ready.
Got into SpongeBob. A little before my time.
First, like, two or three seasons? Really good. I loved it. It was so good.
Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast. It's Tuesday 2/22/22. That's Ian on
Tuesday.
We're going to have a fun time today. What are we talking about today, Ian? Why don't you run down the show for a
change? I mean, we're running down some stuff. So we're going to talk about a big collection being found.
It's a store, old store find.
Well, yeah, it's all the old stock.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Street Fighter VI being announced.
Uh-huh.
We're going to talk about a certain CFO for a certain video game company.
Yeah, why not?
Running his dumb mouth. We're going to talk about the Nintendo 3DS and Wii Shop going bye-bye. And some of your phone calls. some of your voicemails.
Oh, God. Are you tanking this on purpose so you never have to do it again? Because you're doing a great job.
It's like when you're a kid and your mom asks you to do dishes, so you drop the first one.
Okay. What the hell I put up with? Okay. How was your weekend, Ian?
My weekend was actually spectacular. Very tired. It's Tuesday. It is all day. But my weekend was good and long. I had a social life. It's overrated sometimes, though, because it's very exhausting. I played D&D on Friday night. We ran late. I took barbecue chicken. It was a great time. It's wonderful.
Did a giant bear break in and steal it?
No bears broke in. But if you want to hear about a lot of bear news, a lot of bear topics, hot goss.
Hank the Tank news.
Tune in to our bonus segments that you can get on our Patreon at patreon.com/CU podcast.
Sucks at running down the show. Awesome at pimping the Patreon.
I'm good at it. I have my positives. I played house music for some people on Saturday night. That was a lot of fun. It was also Chris's first time DJing outside of the home, out of the home. And
DJ in training.
And he did really, really, really well. He was very nervous, but he did fucking fantastic. And then Sunday I went to Raglan House.
Okay. Went to Raglan without Pat. Okay. I don't remember that next time I go to Mitch's. Okay. Okay.
John was down to record and we went to Raglan and man, I had the meat pies. So good.
I had a meat pie. It's the same meat that's a burger.
I always get the meat pies have become my go-to. It's a 50-50 beef and lamb.
Okay.
Gravy, cheese, flaky pastry crust.
See, I never go for meat pies. I'm not a meat pie guy.
God, it's so good.
Maybe that's because I'm not a...
Comes with a side of zesty gravy for dipping.
Maybe that's more of a thing across the pond. If you're
maybe
from that heritage, if you're like Irish and Scottish, you eat more of that stuff.
I mean, I think that might be why I love them. I mean, because
I never had them growing up. Almost never had it. Like,
I love meat pies. I love patties. I love empanadas. I love any handheld food delivery device.
A meat pie is not handheld.
A meat pie is absolutely handheld. We're talking little meat pies, man.
Oh, you're talking about the big one you cut up?
Talking about a little meat pie.
What are those called? When you make a pie with the meat.
A mince pie.
A mince pie. Okay.
A mince meat pie is a fruit pie. Mincemeat is actually a fruit pie.
Yes.
You can't, but mince is what they call ground beef.
Okay. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
So these are handheld ones.
Yeah.
They're like fruit pies, like a hostess pie, basically.
Yeah, or like, I think they call them pasties in England.
But why would you go there and not get the best burger in San Diego?
Because
it's
one of the best meat pies I've ever had, and it's the same meat.
Okay.
Same meat.
Okay.
I mean, you go to Raglan House because they're using really good organic beef. And they'll cook your shit to whatever temperature you want, including like basically not touched at all. I love ordering
it legally, and you're kind of narking them out there.
No, they said that they can because of the organic beef.
Really? So it's safer. There's not going to be salmonella.
I don't know if that means anything, but yeah, you go there and order your Go there and order your burger rare.
E. coli. That E. coli. E. coli. In sometimes.
Yeah, salmonella.
Not a raglan. The highest quality meat.
Highest quality meats.
Please be a sponsor of us. I don't know how that worked out since like no one else knows about raglan.
We're gonna have to ask you to travel down, like get people to travel.
Come to
down
the
here.
Two locations in California where there's a raglan. I think there's two.
They have They have three restaurants, but raglan is one of them. And from what I've heard, raglan is the best of them. But they're all kind of New Zealand-y restaurants.
New Zealand-y,
yeah,
restaurants.
New Zealand-y. Raglan New Zealand-y. Public House is the full name.
I watched the NBA All-Star Weekend.
Yeah.
Which is like 3-day event. It's a celebration of the sport. Like no other sport has like this, like 3-day celebration. You know, yeah, baseball they do the home run derby. That's about it. No one cares that much. It's like the one event. NHL has a lot of cool events. NHL's got it down. NHL has speed, accuracy, breakaway contest for goalies.
NHL definitely is pretty.
They had a cool thing at the fountains at the Bellagio where they're literally in the middle of the giant fountain and are shooting pucks into little like targets. It was.
Oh, that's awesome.
They did Blackjack 21 with, like, you shoot a puck
little,
up.
Little
you,
fun you fair hit the type cards.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. NHL tries all this shit because NHL is the least popular mainstream sport.
Right, so they can...
So they just try that shit.
My voice keeps cracking. They can just keep throwing shit at the wall
So I watched the NHL one a couple weeks ago. I was like, this is fun. I always watched as a kid. And they had the hardest shot as well. And the accuracy of shooting. Remember Messier won it the 1 year. He got all four in a row or whatever, all five. But anyway... But the NBA one's a whole like celebration of like culture. There's hip hop stuff and like it's an event. So they had the first day they have like the Rising Stars contest. Then the second night they have all the skills contests. Well, no, they added a skills contest. They did a team skills contest where they do like almost like targets on the court. It's a 3-person team. Targets on the court with different points. And then there's also like a passing thing. All three players pass the moving targets. That was new. So that's like the first night. Second night, then they do the traditional 3-point contest, which is awesome. And they do the dunk contest, which this year was controversial because it sucked. Because this year, the dunk contest, no one could do dunks. It was really embarrassing. There was like one person that like tried it
really?
10 times. Yes. They got players that should not have been in the contest, I hate to say it, because they weren't getting close to it.
Sure.
They got Juan Toscano-Anderson from the Warriors, who's a fringe player who puts up a lot of heart. But should not have been in the contest.
They should have pulled the trampoline out.
Almost. They should have got like Kuminga, the rookie who has had insane dunk stats, an athletic freak at like whatever 19 or 20.
Right.
So that's why people become more critical because used to be the stars used to do the dunk contest. They don't anymore. They haven't in forever.
But why?
Jalen Rose had a nice thing saying the newer generation doesn't want to grow the game as much. They're more about if I don't get paid, I don't want to be a part
right.
of it. Like back in the day, Jordan did it and Dominique Wilkins and Vince Carter. Kobe did it, I think, a year or two. So, like, they wanted to help, like, you know, put yourself on a pedestal. Like, people were saying, why isn't John Morant doing it? The guy's one of the most explosive dunkers.
Right.
You know, he put his head almost above the rim and he's only like 6'3 or 6'4. No. And they questioned him and he's like, no, I don't want to do it. And it's like, okay. So that sucked. And that closed the night, unfortunately. Then the All Star game was nuts. 75th anniversary. So at halftime, they had all the people, all the 75th that were still alive, come out, and obviously some of them are passed away because the NBA's started in what? God, it's 47. But there was even some of the old timers from the first say 10, 15 years were still there, 60 years later. And then obviously some people didn't show up, like Larry Bird and like Tim Duncan. They just waved in front of the screen. They got in the way, but it was still like heartfelt to see all the players come out one after the other. And then the rumors were, because it's Jordan, that Jordan was going to be there. He was there earlier the day at some NASCAR event or whatever. And then he showed up and he was the last one. They went forwards, the top forwards, top centers. I'm guessing it was 25, 15, 25 is probably what the breakdown was or something like that. Whoop.
I'm surprised Bird wasn't there.
Or maybe the breakdown was, how to do the math on that. So it's double the amount of guards and forwards versus centers. So Jordan was the last one. It was the last three were Steph, Magic, and Jordan. That was probably planned. To have something like that.
When
Jordan came out, it was like, it was like a holy event. Like the crowd went nuts. And it's like, yes, this is the man.
Right.
This is the man. Even though people argue that, you know, Kareem's one of the GOATs or one of the best. It's like this generation doesn't know Kareem. He stopped playing, what, 89 30 years ago. But when Jordan came out, it was like, holy shit, it's Jordan. Everyone nuts. And then meanwhile, Steph Curry was getting booed because obviously, you know, he's crushed Cleveland for a few of those. Yes, with help. Don't start an argument. Without Steph, they wouldn't have won any of those. And then he then turns around and hit 16 threes in the game.
It's just fucking wild.
And like running. The reason I love Steph Curry is because it's literally like you're watching a game of NBA Jam. Like you're literally watching someone hit shots they should not be hitting when they're on. Like,
sure.
He literally takes a shot from like 40 feet during the game. Twice he did this, but one in particular, he takes a shot and it's halfway. It's in the air, like whatever, 40 feet in the air. He turns and runs away knowing it's going to go in. Like no one else does these things.
Right.
The rest of the players are looking at him like you are an alien.
He's already done the math that ball is going in.
He's on such a, even other players say he's on such a higher level of what he's doing that you can't compare it. And you likely will never see this happen again.
Right.
It's almost one of those things where like, yeah, it's possible, but he's like reached this other point of knowing the touch on these shots. Like it's, you can't almost train for that. Like you train for that, but he's at this other level now.
You can train to a certain degree, but yeah, there's still. So you're just no born else, with some of that.
No. He went like 16. It was like he missed the last four or five threes. People are like, oh, he's washed or making jokes because he was tired. You can't throw up 25 threes from 40 feet and not be tired in a game.
Right.
And plus all the energy. But he hit like the first 16 of like 22, which is nuts. Like 75, 80%, you know? And then he hit like a teardrop in the fourth where he like with his left hand threw it up 20 feet in the air from like 12 feet and it from the baseline it just went in like just it was nuts. Sorry, I'm a Curry fanboy sometimes. Curry and Clay, my two boys there.
So Street Fighter 6 was announced over the weekend. There was a big countdown thing that was released about a week ago, and it coincided I think with the end of the Capcom Pro Tour, something like that. So everyone was like, yeah, it's going to be, you know, the Street Fighter 6 announcement. You know, they're going to show off the game or something like that. And they did. They announced Street Fighter 6. They did not really show it off. That was, I think, the majority of that time was spent talking about the Capcom Fighting Collection, which we'll talk about in a minute. So they didn't really show anything. It was more like an announcement of an announcement. It was like, yeah, Street Fighter's being worked on. We know that. It hit with the impact of when Bethesda did that Elder Scrolls 6 trailer like 2 years ago at 2 years ago?
Was it more than that at this point?
2-3 years ago at E3 where it was just Elder Scrolls 6 and it was a camera flying over mountain. Like a landscape.
It's yeah, like
literally like a mountain and some trees. And that was it. This showed an extremely wide and beefy Ryu.
I was going to say, I did see the meme of him looking like Kylo Ren in the, episode 8, The Last Jedi, where like Kylo Ren is like really super beefy, almost like old school man.
Like, he looks like a deli ham still in its wrapper, just trying to like burst out. It's ridiculous. I hate it.
It's how like muscular leading men were like in the 50s and 40s. Like they weren't well defined, but they were still beefy. But anyway, so yeah, Ryu was looking thick.
Yeah.
Looking really thick.
A lot of thickness.
Really wide. Like Hank the Tank Bear. Really wide.
A real thickness. The logo is bad.
Is that the big takeaway? Not him talking to this other character for 20 seconds?
No.
Who's the other character?
I don't know. I can't recall who
US
it was.
Character?
Yeah, I don't recall who it was.
But the logo. Some of the logo.
The logo. Street Fighter 6 logo is bad. It looks like a budget UFC app logo that you would maybe see.
A budget UFC
like a logo someone would make for bootleg UFC streams.
You alright, little one?
Oh, sorry, that's a Genshin Impact ad loading on IGN.
Yeah, weird. And then the 6 looks like the little notifications badge that tells you you've got to get rid of some notifications on like your text messages.
So it's how many sizes? 1, 2, 3,
it's
four,
a hexagon.
It's a hexagon. 6 sides. For 6. Oh.
It's a hexagon with the letters S and F on the inside.
It looks like a superhero team logo. That's what it looks like.
A shitty one.
Yes, because it's just white, a white hexagon and
flat
a white
design.
SF, and there's just a 6 in the corner.
Yeah, and the 6 really does look like one of those little nagging icons that tells you to check your like messages on your phone.
And so every Street Fighter logo is usually looks somewhat the same font or has some sort of red and yellow motif and some flames involved. And this said, fuck you. We're not doing any of that. We're just gonna pull what seems to be an Adobe stock image, and just literally modify it for like 3 seconds.
A lot of people have been like, well, it's just the logo. That's true. But it does also kind of speak to like the amount of effort that people are putting into something going forward. You're supposed to be, this is your announcement of the game. Put your best foot forward. So a lot of people are like, well, it's probably a placeholder.
We like placeholder stuff.
Yeah, we do. So maybe it is a placeholder. hopefully that'll be the case, because after looking into it, this is literally a stock logo that you can buy from, I believe it's Adobe, for $80, with some slight modifications to the F, and I think the points maybe on the S, but it was clearly a starting point.
Is a different modified version seemingly uses a logo for the SF Connection sci-fi connection in France. Oh boy. So Capcom, we know you have some artists on staff. They're obviously, because they're making their games. You couldn't have someone in even a couple hours mock up something with flames. Like, even this logo, Ian, had the yellow and red sort of font colors with some flames attached. It would be 100 times better than this. Because it's like gray and white are not Street Fighter colors. They're just not. So why do that?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
The other thing I'd point out about it is that people say like they're trying to go for that like generic esports market. And I can see that is a very generic esportsy looking logo.
But that's not the audience for this. I mean, it is a little bit like
But they're not. You're not going to gain. Bring more people into the Street Fighter fold by making it look boring and dumb.
No, it's a heralded fighting game series. Yeah. It's not.
You can do whatever you want with Street Fighter.
It's the longest running fighting game series. It's the granddaddy.
The new logo could be pink and sparkly. It doesn't matter. So just kind of stick with your tradition. Okay. Make a new logo.
Do you like the if that's going to be the graphic style? Do you care about that? You know, it's a 2D game. Like, do you care about that?
It's on the RE engine. I don't know. I'll have to see pictures of it when they show more. I'm not particularly excited about the visual direction of this.
The beefness.
I know it's just an initial impression,
Speaking of impression, some people thought that Ryu was showing some junk in his pants.
Oh.
I think that was like a shadow effect, but if they took the time to draw that out, mm-hmm. but not a real logo, we want to show little Ryu down there.
Little Ryu.
Little Ryu, beefy Ryu.
So also announced at the same time and given more attention, something that I'm very, very excited about, is the Capcom Fighting Collection was announced with an official trailer. 10 games that have, I think, a lot of fighting game fans have been looking for. One in particular getting its first ever.
I can't. Sorry, IGN. I can't do any more with your auto loading ads. I can't do it.
I mean, just turn it down.
No, they're off, and then they put them on for the ad. Sorry.
It's going to include Darkstalkers, The Night Warriors, Night Warriors Darkstalkers Revenge, Vampire Savior, The Lord of Vampire, Vampire Hunter 2, Vampire Savior 2, Red Earth. I believe that's the first time Red Earth is coming to consoles.
Never heard of it.
Cyberbots, Super Gem Fighter Mini Mix, Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo, and Hyper Street Fighter 2. That being the only Street Fighter, because the collection, the 30th anniversary collection, was released a couple of years ago. There's no need for another collection or those to be on here. That's really exciting, especially for me to see all the Darkstalkers games together. I love those. Vampire Savior is a favorite of mine and Vonnie's. Vonnie's got the arcade board for it, so very excited for that.
Hyper Fighting's just trash. They just threw it on.
Definitely excited to play Red Earth and check that out.
I have not heard of that game. Looked it up, Red Earth.
Like I said, CPS3, one of the only other CPS3 games.
96, okay.
So this looks like it's going to be good. All of them with rollback netcode.
Woo! I'm excited.
Quality of life features and improvements. Don't know what those are going to be yet, but obviously it'll be interesting to see. So yeah, super excited for that. And it comes out really soon. It comes out June 24th.
All right, so you're excited.
Yep. So I'm
trying to think. Yeah, I haven't played Vampire Savior. I've played. I played Darkstalkers. A little bit when it was, but I don't remember playing it much. But I remember CSI playing that, and I don't know if I played Cyberbots. I don't remember seeing that in an arcade.
No, I don't think I ever did.
Did that come out here?
That one might have had a Saturn port, but I don't think it never came out.
Oh, that's interesting. Either way, that's interesting. That's a nice little thing. And obviously, I'm in love with Puzzle Fighter, am in love with Puzzle Fighter. Gem Fighter I like as much, but I remember Puzzle Fighter liking it a lot more.
Oh, I love. Well, I mean, they're two completely different games. Yeah, so one's a fighting game.
Yeah.
But I love Super Puzzle Fighter. It's great.
No, they're fun.
Okay, yeah, Cyberbots did get a release on Saturn and PlayStation.
This is always confusing when I was on the main cam. Like, which one's Gem Fighter, which one's Puzzle? It's like, I want the puzzle one, so it's Puzzle.
The puzzle game has Puzzle in the name.
And it's brilliant because the fighters have different combos based upon the patterns of... so there's ones that have easier combos for vertical, mm-hmm. some have diagonal. And you could go from almost dead to messing someone up really quickly. That game's very momentum-based. So I'm excited about that. I would probably buy that on its own, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's great.
With online play, fantastic.
Absolutely. So there you go, Ian. Speaking of pro gaming, this is a fun, weird story. A pro gamer fired after saying men under 5'7" don't have human rights. This is a Kotaku article. The Tekken Esports pro made the peculiar remarks during a Cyclops athlete gaming online stream. Professional Tekken player Tana Kuna has been booted from Osaka-based esports team Cyclops Athlete Gaming for remarks she made about men's heights during a live stream, following a recent spate of far more incendiary remarks. Wow, okay. Tana Kuna has been on one. February 15th stream, Tana Kuna said men who are under 170 centimeters, which is 5'6.9", don't have human rights. She added they should look into getting bone lengthening surgery. Wow. Okay. Interesting enough, the average height for men in Japan is about 5'7". So she's like, that's her cutoff for human rights.
She also said people with A cup breasts don't have human rights.
Oh, okay. Equal opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she certainly seems to have a record of saying terrible things. Has dug up earlier comments that she made in a live stream in 2020, in which she apparently told someone during a stream to kill themselves, and that they were the trashiest trash from society.
Okay.
Well.
While some in the West might interpret her remarks as a poor meme or a joke, in Japan it set off a firestorm online with people calling it discriminatory. In a now deleted tweet, you can see here, Tanu Kuna wrote, "It was pointed out that my stream contained hate speech. She added this was not her intention and that she poorly expressed her love of tall people." You know, you can say I love tall people without saying short people don't have human rights. I think there's a different way of expressing these sentiments. Oh, that's kind of funny. Oh, boy. She apologized, but it was hardly the kind of formal apology that's become expected in Japan. This made people online even more upset. Wow. Okay. That's fun. That's a fun story.
All right.
You all have rights at ultimatenintendo.com. You all do. Yeah, I don't discriminate. You can buy whatever guidebooks you want there.
Oh, that's enamel capitalism. Pins.
Absolutely. Your money's good for RBI baseball stickers. Doesn't matter your height.
Your money's good.
I love short people's money, tall people's money. Ian loves them all as well. Medium people's money as well. I'll be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/contracode, showing the best of 70s, 80s.
I won't be on Twitch Wednesday.
It should be. And we're going to both be at the SoCal Gaming Expo this weekend, February 26th and 27th, at the Ontario Convention Center. Is that convention?
It's my convention roof? Dance.
Little convention.
It's dance. My little convention dance.
Right there. Oh, and we'll have fun. It's our first convention together in about, holy crap,
86 years.
I was going to say 18 months, but no, it is 30 months.
Yeah.
30 months?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over 2 years.
2.5 years there. Is this big, big news, Ian?
What?
Big, big news! A game hall found.
Yeah.
27 years later in a storage unit in Nebraska.
Hundreds of sealed SNES games.
Gotta do it once.
Sealed!
Also Genesis games there. 3DO.
So hundreds of unopened SNES, Sega, and 3DO games sitting in a Nebraska storage facility since 1994 when a store shut down and everything was put into storage. There's a video that you can see of them going through it with things like Breath of Fire 2,
Chrono Trigger.
Chrono Trigger. Final Fantasy III, Gunstar Heroes.
One I couldn't remember yesterday.
Yeah. The run-and-gun shooter by Capcom that has a dude with brown hair.
I thought it was Capcom.
That was literally what you said.
As a dude with brown hair and a red cover. Because of the video. The problem with this video. And who found this scene real quick?
I don't know who did find it.
It's a YouTube channel called This Is Game Room.
Ah, yes.
And they're dealers as well. This video's got 170,000 views.
Nebraska-based game reseller Game Room.
Probably not a lot of stuff going on in Nebraska to find, but they found this.
Two staff members identified as Chris and John. That's okay. Who they are. Chris okay. And John.
So this video is like a one-take sort of shaky cam. You can see some of it. God, it's like it doesn't focus on anything. There's like three. Looks like Mario is missing. There's a few Sim Cities. Baseball Simulator, Hyperstone, Ninja Heist. Turtles on Genesis, Hyperstone Heist.
Yeah.
Okay. Street Fighter Turbos. There's a lot here, and a lot of these is multiple copies of the games too.
Mm-hmm.
When you kind of break this down, when you look at it, Splatterhouse 3 sealed. There you go.
That one's right in the beginning.
That's right in the beginning. I'm going through this. So yeah, they got gold here. They got gold. It was a closed store. I guess we don't know what store it was. That's not in this article, is it?
We're not privy to that information.
Privy to that. Thousands of classic titles, it says.
Thousands.
It says hundreds here. Then the article says thousands. So I don't get why I would say hundreds in the title, then say thousands. So, that's a lot of money nowadays, obviously.
It's a shitload.
With this market, that's seven figures.
Yeah.
For sure. Because a Chrono Trigger by itself goes for thousands upon thousands at this nuts. It also depends on what these are great at. But this was a game store, and most of these are probably sort of new. They got them new to sell. You know.
You think these are going to get straight graded and slabbed? Yeah. At this point.
This will be the Nebraska collection or whatever.
The Nebraska collection. Gross. Yeah,
that's what they're gonna call it. Chris and John are, this is a Game Rant article. Chris and John are later seen with organized tubs of Super Nintendo, 3DO, Genesis, Saturn, and Sega CD. Oh, missed that. The pair reiterate most of what they found are widely available games. There were still plenty of open gems to make up for, including Ninja Turtles 4 and Sunset Riders.
Well, I hate to say it, but widely available doesn't fucking mean anything at this point.
Well, no, because these people that are buying the sealed games don't give a shit about if the game's rare or not. It has nothing to do with it. We already said that. It doesn't matter if the game's rare or not. It has nothing to do with the pricing. It doesn't matter.
That is what we have said.
You're goofy today.
Yeah.
Hank the Tank Bear got you goofy.
Yeah, Hank did get me goofy.
I don't want a lot more to say about it because I would love to have seen just a list, but they probably want to quote-unquote protect their investment, because if they found a game that's like 20 sealed copies of a game that's... What's so funny?
Is it quote-unquote protect their investment?
Because the only reason you don't reveal what you found is because you want to bring this stuff to market and probably slowly.
Right. If they say they've got 10 or 20 of a really popular game, then that first one's not going to go for nearly as much because people are going to hold
they'll dwindle.
Wait.
Yeah. They'll dwindle.
Right.
So I understand that. But
I get it, too.
But they said the reason they said they didn't want to reveal all the amount was for where's the exact quote, Ian, that about this?
Oh yeah, this is dumb.
It said it was for they want to preserve the games and document them. That's what I saw the quote was.
Yeah, they're preserved. They've been preserved. People got to stop throwing the word preservation around.
I mean, yes, they're preserved.
Throwing these in a. I mean, sell them, make your money. Even throw them in the plastic cases if that's what you want to do. But don't. You're not preserving them. Preservation is making sure we have access to these things like a library for years and years to come. That's not preservation. All those games are retail releases. They've been preserved.
Yeah, I mean, they're not thrown in the trash, but they're preserved. In terms of documenting them, you document...
They're documented.
...sealed games by making a list saying this is what we got. So, I mean, no, I get it. It's just funny how, you know... It is. It's a big fight. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
it could change their lives selling these games. You know, I wonder. There's nothing about how much they bought it for, or like if it was an auction against other people, like a Storage Wars sort of auction, like what they got it for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's always interesting. But this stuff is always out there. Every year or so, we talk about finds like this, like the huge treasure trove, all the sealed, remember the mask toys in South America somewhere?
Oh, yeah, that was like crazy.
To the ceiling of them.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't every single mask toy, but it was like whatever, 8 to 10 different ones. They had tons of them out there. This stuff happens. We're not crazy when we say this stuff.
No.
We're not.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
So, yeah, that's all I got to say about that. The CFO of Intellivision has a lot to say in the comments on Star Engine, though.
Too much to say.
Yeah.
Too much to say.
In a way, it's worse than the former CEO, because this person actually has some financial knowledge, but still has the same sort of, like, overly aggressive and defensive stance.
Well, and also, the former CEO was at least somehow... charming to a number of people. I know, right. I know. But this guy is not charming to anyone.
Oh, no.
No, Nick Richards is not a charming individual. He kills prairie dogs.
No, prairie dogs are not enamored with Nick Richards.
No, they're not.
Not just kills.
And laughs at it.
Laughs at it and uploads videos that he then, you know, takes down when he realizes people guy. We got the footage, Nick, by the way. People, the videos, we have those videos.
Anyway, enough about his murder preferences.
Yes. Yes. Enough about genocide of cute little animals. Let's talk about some of his responses here. The thing about the responses from Nick is that he brings up haters a lot to potential investors. That haters?
Do you realize how crazy you have to sound to constantly bring up haters to professional investors?
How can you give a person...
Your ship is sinking and you're using the term haters?
Because that's what they glom onto. They can't realize that, hey, listen, at this point, we're just trying to pay off our own salaries and loans with interest. So we got to blame the haters for our failures. Not the fact that this is an ill-conceived product that was run by people that, I think I said, Tommy Tuberville shouldn't be running a hot dog stand, let alone a video game company. And this is the sort of group you have when you have a bunch of yes men that see a bunch of they thought they could take advantage of the video game community the same way Mike Kennedy thought he could with the chameleon. We can just take advantage of them and just bank on nostalgia. Unfortunately, they took advantage of a bunch of investors who didn't know better. If not, this would have never gotten this point. This would have been gone a year ago. A year ago, this would have been gone.
If there was no investors at all.
If they never got the Republic funds, the millions of dollars, this would have been done a year ago. But this is what you do. You pay back loans, and you string along this company. I mean, I've seen some people postulate that there has been really much development on this console the past 2 years.
No, it's been smoke and mirrors for 2 years. Everyone that you talked to about this was even any remote inside like knowledge of it. Everything we've gathered, there has not been really any forward progress on this since 2019.
The fact that
it's been showing off the scraps of what they have in new and clever ways to get more money to finish it.
Yeah, we'll do some deep dive videos. We'll go out to Turkey Point, as Ian says.
Turkey Point.
And we'll go out. We'll have some of our cultists help set up events for us in order to get more investors on board. And that's what we've seen over the past year. That's what we've been seeing. And but now Nick is revealing some sort of change potentially in strategies,
strategic changes,
like potentially, I don't know, getting rid of shit that the console doesn't need, like LEDs, changing the design of the console to accommodate that. Here's the problem, Nick. It's way too late to think about a redesign of this console. We are way past that point.
Yeah, he's talking about like how after the first like run comes out in some of these comments that they're going to do a smaller footprint model with one controller and no LEDs. So here's the funny thing. Here's what I find funny about that. Just the fact that he's talking at all about releasing a slimline model when they're not even going to release
the slim Amico.
Yeah, the Amico Slim,
which is an Android phone or a tablet.
But also the full-on admittance that it doesn't need something like the LEDs. one of those railing points from early on that the LEDs were going to change how games were played fundamentally.
And you can use it as a display. Remember, a display piece in your living room.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They were going to fundamentally change how some of these games were going to be played. Insisted that they were necessary and not just a tacky add-on, yet we have never seen any examples of how they would affect gameplay at all, other than like a brief suggestion, I think, by someone else on Atari Age about how they could use for like B-12 bomber or something.
Sure. So Kevin asked a question 9 days ago. I finally got a response this morning.
Oh,
including about like how you can get funding for new games. How are you going to compete with, you know, these other systems on a price point? What is the cost of goods and the cost reduction? These are smart questions. Or an answer for a week and a half. And there other people were asking questions about why did you have the board members do these loans at these ridiculous rates when you could have got a business loan for far less. And the answer is because our board members want that money. I mean, that's basically what it is.
That's what he said?
No, he didn't say that, but that's the answer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know you that's the answer.
If you care about the
health, obviously, that's the answer.
If you care about the health of a company, you get a business loan at a great rate. You don't do fucking 10% loans or loans at 2.5% per month. In order to fund your business goals. Here's some of the responses. Nick said, with regard to your question about funding games, many large startups with significant cash requirements, we must continue to execute on our fundraising strategy to keep on plan. Funding the games is part of this. We are in discussions with a few large mobile development companies about strategic partnership / investment, which would give
us... Did he say mobile development companies? So he's already admitting that... I mean,
these are mobile games.
Yes. We're beyond
pretend or not. Which would give us access to new game IP, cross-licensing revenue, development cash, and a good technical / development partner. We also have the opportunity to apply for economic development funds in Germany, which could be as much as $1.2 million. Keep in mind, that's the reason they have most of their games, is because of German taxpayer money.
Yep.
We'll just keep fleecing Germany. We'll just keep fleecing our friends over in Germany. Our strategy going forward is not exclusively first party. We will continue to develop games in-house with our development partners, but we'll also be licensing games that fit the intended experience for the Amico. At this point, we think we could have approximately 15 games in 2022. Yes, most of them German games, or games that already are on other systems like Rigid Force Redux. We know that. Or Finnegan Fox, which is an ugly splash of paint. Another 20 to 30 in 2023. Yeah.
Wow, that is like way lower than what they were saying. 50 games at launch and all that. Well, 15 games total in 2022 is what they're saying now.
If they're lucky.
And that's six pack-ins.
Profit and loss. Profit looks to be achievable with an annual production of 150,000 to 200,000 units. That to me doesn't mean we're going to be in the profit at 150,000 sold. That to me means we've got to do that year over year.
Yes.
To pay back all these other loans and to have them. And plus, they need money for production for these. That's why they're doing this. They can't just produce 150,000 units. They need the money to produce these units. Mm-hmm. This is where he brings up Sam Mekovich from Ars Technica for no reason. Our cost of goods info is confidential as most companies, but I can say that it is more than $100 that Sam Mekovich from Ars Technica stated, and now how many have parodied. I mean, they're done. They're done at this point. Unless they get an angel investor to give them, we'll just say, $10 to $20 million, which is what Tommy Tallarico claimed they had years ago, they're not going to have the money to produce these. That's the bottom line. They're not.
Right.
I think if you can get to say, well, we'll get the 5,000 founders out, I don't know if they're even going to go through that charade.
2,600?
Or 2,600. I don't know if they're going to go through that charade at this point. They might, but like they're so far behind, obviously. There's no cloud. There's no cloud setup. No servers that we know of.
Keep in mind that they need 5 million from this campaign
to go
to secure 5 million from another campaign that will keep them going for not even a year, 7 to 9 months.
Yeah,
they need 25 to 35 million additional next year. I don't see any way out of, there's no way out of this.
Sell as many physical products that you want. This is what Nick also says. Our early adopters will not necessarily be cross-shopping Amico against the other consoles. Really? Really? How are you so sure about that? They will typically be non-gamer families.
This is what they've been the whole time with.
This is great because it really shows they're going for the low-information consumer.
Yep.
They will typically be non-gamer families with little knowledge of the gaming industry. So you're banking on families that don't know any better, that they're getting something that's overpriced and basically underpowered versus the competitors. That's great, Nick. You really think still that Walmart's going to put that on the shelves next to a Switch or an Xbox or a PlayStation? You really think they're going to waste their time? Walmart and Target knows their audiences. They know what people are willing to pay for certain products.
You've admitted that they're just mobile games. Yeah. You've admitted that it's going to only sell to low information consumers. I mean, at least the mask's off in terms of this thing not like supposed to have any appeal. It's just supposed to sell.
You admitted that the LEDs are bullshit.
Yep.
You admitted that the controllers are an albatross. A quagmire of just overproduced madness.
Yep.
The controllers. All this stuff. But we were haters. We were haters, according to Tommy. It sounds like stuff that they're taking from us talking about this 2 years ago. That, hey, we should listen to some of these ideas.
Maybe we should have listened to these idiots.
You should have turned this around over 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago is when you should have shifted on this stuff. The secondary benefit is that there are some fun games for the parents to play as well. Because there's none on the Switch, obviously.
Other part that I liked. He's basically like, this is just for kids who don't know any better.
Yeah. The idea that Amico is dedicated to this type of family experience and others are not is the primary differentiator. Pulling that out of your butt. This will obviously resonate more in certain segments such as... Here we go, finally. Faith-based communities, as the video game industry in general, has a poor reputation of promoting themes and behaviors that do not align well to these communities. It'd be great when your former CEO... This is definitely a faith-based quote.
Hey, let's face it, Rich. You know damn well, both me and you, if we had the opportunity to get a lap dance from the Little Mermaid, we'd be all over it. True or false?
Good point. I'm not going to deny that.
That's right, Rich. You can't deny having a lap dance from a 15-year-old cartoon character. That's great for faith-based communities. We agree with that. So this is nuts. The system you see today will more than likely always be priced at the lower end of the other systems. But they're not, though, because this audience would be, like we always said, like $100 to $120, 20 games, and get it out the door. I think that's why I always said, like, that's your best path for success.
Yeah.
Now, obviously not with these awful controllers.
No.
We need someone to go, $120, 20 games, and you never make another fucking game after that.
Or you've got the SD card slot on there. You release packs of games if you want to.
Physical packs of games.
You can. The door open for that, but you don't have to do anything after that. You can sell it just as the plug and play system. You would be able to expand it via an SD card.
And maybe
it's not like these games take up any memory.
And then you don't bother with your NFT shit or your online leaderboards because no one gives a shit. Like people always say, how many people are going to have this anyway to have an online leaderboard in your city? They said, oh, we're going to have city leaderboards and state. No one in your city is going to have an Amico besides you. Like, no one.
Printable certificates.
Printable certificate. Like, yeah. That was your path to success, we always said. Like, $120 cap, 20 games, or whatever. 15, 20 games, and that's it. With that said, if we simply become an alternative to the Switch with no meaningful differentiation and just try to be a cheaper, inferior version, we will obviously fail. Well, you are a cheaper, inferior version of the Switch, but you're going to cost more money. So how does that work out? It's cheaper design, cheaper games, but you're going to end up costing more than the Switch.
And there's always going to be the comparison to the Switch because you're trying to make a family gaming device. You can't just come out here and say, well but that's not our market. That is your market because the other market doesn't exist.
No. I guess if you went after the faith-based communities and try to market to them directly, are there many of those out there in order to turn a profit? Like, at this point...
I feel like that's also a real, like, 1980s mindset, though. Like, I'm not saying
Wisdom Tree mode.
I'm not saying that faith-based communities are always the smartest, but I also feel like they're probably beyond just buying whatever is maybe.
And there's parental controls in all these anyway.
Right.
That's the thing. They're out there anyway.
And they're a pain to crack because I hate it when people leave parental controls on systems when they used to trade them into Luna.
Sure. We're planning on launching a less expensive model that takes out some of the extra features, such as the large array of LEDs. You can tell that Nick always
does not like the LEDs.
But you're on board with Tommy the whole time, Nick. You're on board, and so is Phil Adam, the current CEO. You always knew some of this was bullshit. You always knew these controllers were too complicated. But you had a man-child running the company and designing the console that you got on board with. And you're profiting anyway because you're getting your salary and you're getting your loans back, paid back so far with interest partially, and which he tried to deny in the comments. Say, oh, no, the loans aren't even paying back. And people
are
like,
it shows.
It's in the SEC document. The loans have been paid back.
Did he have any response to that?
I don't.
Probably not.
No. Come on. Come on, Nick.
Probably not.
We're not prairie dogs. You can't take advantage of us.
Oh, boy.
You can't do that.
We are not prairie dogs. It's true. It's true. I am not a prairie dog.
No, we're not. Less expensive models. The controllers being the most complex components of this. It's always great when your controller is the most complex part of the system more than the console itself. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? Once we finalize our production assembly and testing optimization and have a good idea of the throughput we can achieve, once we finalize our production assembly and testing optimization, and there's people still thinking this is going to come out like quarter one or even quarter two this year. There's people still thinking that this is going to happen. They're holding out hope.
Yeah. I mean, it's not coming out quarter one or quarter two this year.
So they can't even publish a final price for the controllers. According to Nick, we don't know what they're going to. We have no idea. A year and a half after our first launch date slipped, we have no idea what the controllers are going to cost. Like, not a fucking clue. Nary a clue. You can't make this up.
No.
You can't. There's no one at this company qualified to run a gaming company at this point. Like, nobody. No adults in the room. No one with real prior. Someone asked, you got people from the software side, Interplay. What about hardware? Like, making hardware of video game consoles and shipping hardware, which is entirely different than software, which is what we always said on top of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's nuts. It's nuts.
All right. Well, that could have been its own segment.
It could have been. I didn't think I was going to get that heated, to be honest, but like.
You got hot and bothered.
Because it's this has become the chameleon. Like, this is our worst nightmare that would happen with the chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
You get pre-orders to a console that may never come out, and you have investors taking for several million dollars, if not more, that they're never going to see a dime. You got people, they're gone. The money's gone. And these people running the company that mismanages are profiting off of it. That's the worst nightmare. And here it is. And they were enabled partly by YouTubers.
Oh, yeah. No one asking the pertinent questions.
No. All right.
We're sliding on into the real podcast.
We're sliding.
The main zone. What do you want to talk? Oh, Nintendo.
Ian.
Patrick.
This has come out the past week or so. I think it was last Wednesday. My printer is cleaning itself again, which always freaks me
out. Nice. Love it.
Up to 1,000 digital-only games will disappear when Nintendo closes its 3DS and Wii U stores. Nintendo officially announced they're going to be closing these stores March of next year of 2023. So about 13 months from now, they're going
to
be closing.
Yeah, and I think I need to find out when you can. I'm going to try to find out when you can stop buying currency, but that ends sooner.
This article says from May 23rd, 2022, it will no longer be possible to use credit cards in the store.
Okay.
And as of August 29th, the real drop-dead date, it will no longer be possible to use eShop cards to add funds either. So you got to basically get all your money on board into that shop by August 29th, it sounds like. So you have to add your funds. You have to add your eShop funds by August 29th. Hell, load up $2,000 if you want onto these five. But August 29th is the last date. So that's really what you'd be looking out for.
Yeah.
Versus credit cards in May.
So this is a real problem, and we've seen it as companies have shut down stores before. But I think it's particularly noticeable on something like the 3DS. And actual game preservation is difficult with this. So with older systems, you know, everything got released on a cartridge or a CD. And so even if a game was rare, there were physical copies of it out there that you could pull from. With the 3DS, with like the advent of online stores, you start to now see a lot of games that only get digital releases. they don't get any physical releases.
Yeah, going back to the original Xbox. Yeah.
Yeah. And as time goes on, you get more and more of those types of releases. So it's not just one or two games you have to worry about. It's hundreds or thousands. And we're at the point now where it's hundreds of games. Games that, you know, some of them were small-time developers, small-time indie stuff. But some of these games have big developers or, you know...
some are Nintendo. First party.
You know, big producers attached to that... you're not going to be able to get them anymore. And there are no physical copies out there. So everyone's got to get them and download them onto their systems and hope that their systems stay alive, because the systems are going to start to break down. And it's a real tricky situation.
So let's just go before I get into not really counterpoint, but just a little slight variation of that. In total, according to this Video Games Chronicle article, there's about 2,000 games currently available on the 3DS and Wii U shop. Wii U eShop stores in the West, including there's around 450 digital-only Wii U games, around 600 digital-only 3DS games, around 100 Wii U games that are also available physically from that list, so that means like around 350, and then around 300 3DS games that are also available physically, so that means about 300, about half the 3DS games are digital-only there. And there's also obviously the virtual console games that are not currently available on Switch Online that are still somewhere on those two platforms.
It sucks losing that, but at least those are, you know, those are safe somewhere.
More. This is some of the notable Wii U download only exclusives set to disappear for good. Affordable Space Adventures, Amiibo Tap, Chasing Aurora, Dr. Luigi. I forgot about that one. The Letter, Mini Mario and Friends Amiibo Challenge, Pokemon Rumble U, Pushmo World or Pull Blocks World in Europe, and Shut the Box. And there's other ones that are. Art Academy Home Studio, Mario vs. Donkey Kong Tipping Stars, unavailable. It was unavailable here to begin with. And Fast Racing Neo.
Some big ones to point out on the 3DS would be Dylan's Rolling Western 1 and 2. Those are Nintendo-made games that have never seen a physical release. Dr. Mario is also first-party Nintendo. Losing a ton of Picross games, like 8 or 9 Picross games. including like Sanrio ones and Nintendo themed ones, Pokemon Picross, all the Pushmo games, which they put a huge amount of effort into like promoting those when they came out.
Sure.
And it's just like, this is the only way you can get them. You know, that entire push, all that marketing, all that effort, is going to be nothing when these games disappear. One that I really like, Pocket Card Jockey.
I just looked that one up. Sorry, go on.
It's amazing. Pocket Card Jockey is by Game Freak, and it's got art by Ko Takuchi. It's an amazing solitaire game that integrates horse racing. It's really cute, really deep. It's fantastic. Another Game Freak game that's on the list in addition to Pocket Card Jockey is Harmonite. Harmonite's a rhythm platformer. Those are both by the people who make Pokemon. So there's a lot of stuff. All of the Guild 1 and 2 games, which were artsier games that were done by like the likes of Suda51,
okay,
with Liberation Maiden. Crimson Shroud was an RPG that had a soundtrack by the guy who did, I think, Final Fantasy Tactics soundtrack, and I think some art too. That's going to be gone. So we're losing a lot of stuff, and it's not just small throwaway titles.
No, but. Let's be careful though when we say we're losing it. Like, I could find these games online, like, illegally if I want to. These games are dumped. You can find them, get a flash card and play them, but it's a pain in the ass. Obviously, it's not legal to do that. And you know what I mean? Like, so when you say, like, we're losing them, it's like we're losing them official means of getting them. So to me, that means it'll be harder for the next generation to learn about them, mm-hmm, if they're not available. That to me is the big thing. It's more of an education thing at that point, sure, versus preservation. It's more about how do we pass on the knowledge of some of these games that were available in a moment in time 20 years from now? How are we going to know about them? That to me, yes, is the larger point. Is, well, that, yeah, you know what I mean?
I don't think that's that different than what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, when you say they're lost, to me it means like you can't get them at all.
Which, I mean, you can, but I mean, they're lost to the public knowledge. The lack of some easy access to it is going to cause them to diminish in the terms of the public knowledge.
Oh, sure.
That's my point with Pushmo. There was a moment where Nintendo was gung-ho on that. The 3DS was hot. They were pushing the series. They made three of those games. And, it'll be like it never existed.
Sure. So then obviously virtual console stuff, that's not as big of a deal because, I mean, those are,
like I said, that's everywhere. I mean, it's, all of those, yeah, are, that yeah, sucks, that's fine, but those are all preserved.
Yeah. We can, you can play any, you know, Game Gear games and DS games. All these ROMs are online for all of these games. You know, your game, I just searched for and found the ROM in a second.
Sure.
That you brought up. So like, you can find this stuff and, you know, it's not ideal, but yes, people will be able to play these even on original hardware, if not emulation. So then obviously there was people talking about this, including our friends at the Video Game History Foundation. If you click on that Inverse article, it has some, it had a nice balanced sort of response to this. It has some points and counterpoints about this. Back in 2021, this article is from, who wrote this good article here? Hayes Madsen. I never even heard of Inverse before. Back in 2021, Sony announced plans to close the digital stores for the PS3 and Vita, but reversed course after a similar backlash. But Nintendo was unlikely to change its decision, according to Serkan Toto, a CEO of Tokyo-based games industry consultancy Kantan Games. His quote, "Nintendo decided to make a cut because of commercial and operational reasons," Toto tells Inverse. "One could ask how much money a $70 billion company can really save by shutting down the eShop. But one could also ask, how long is it supposed to run? Until 2050? So you see both points. It's like, yes, what's the reasonable expectation to keep these afloat? Is it 10 years? Is it 20 years? Is it 25? How long do you put man hours and resources towards something that, honestly, no one's really using anymore? It is a point to bring up. And unfortunately, there's never going to be a clean answer about that. There just isn't. This is the research I did, and I'm not saying what Nintendo's doing is fair or right, but let's within reason. I talked to two people I know. One person has a game out there. It's also on the Wii U that I know, an independent game. And I talked to another person that actually was involved with a launch title on the 3DS. And I straight up asked the one person on how much, you know, that we were robbing conversation in terms of their sales. A game that makes hundreds of thousands of years. I said, you know, how much
dollars?
$100,000 a year. How much money did you make off of Wii U in the past year? And they told me $20.
Oh, sure.
You're talking like one or two people or three people bought this game in the past year on it. You know,
but the Wii U and the 3DS are very different. I think both of them provide good examples for and against. Sure.
But I did ask about a 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
A 3DS launch title, mind you.
Launch.
I asked how much. You know, the person told me they got a royalty check for literally a dollar over the past whatever time frame, last quarter or 6 months. So that just shows you, it gives you an idea of just like, these are barren shops, probably more so than the Wii U and 3DS. But even a lot of 3DS people have moved on to the Switch the past few years.
Yeah.
So when you say like, you know, why can't I keep this up? It's, from Nintendo's perspective, like, we're not making a dime off of this really at this point. We're just not. So like, why should we keep it open? So there's got to have a conversation at some point about, like if Nintendo came out and said something like, this is how much this is actually going to cost us to keep this open. But they were never going to do that. They're going to reveal like, this is how much it actually would cost us to run these shops over time and have all these servers versus how much we're actually making. People at least would understand, if not agree with it, they'd be like, okay, we get it. You can't devote hundreds of thousands or whatever it costs for the servers when you're not making any money more, whatever it costs. You can't do that. It doesn't make any sense from a business standpoint. There's gotta be a happy medium to this. There has to be. I don't know what it is.
I don't either.
You want to talk about the Video Game History Foundation's statement?
Sure. I thought you were about to read it because you had been looking it up.
Oh yeah. Okay. They said, while it is unfortunate that people won't be able to purchase digital 3DS or Wii U games anymore, we understand that the business reality that went into this decision. What we don't understand is what path Nintendo expects its fans to take. Should they wish to play these games in the future? As a paying member of the ESA, the Entertainment Software Association, Nintendo actively funds lobbying that prevents even libraries from being able to access legal access to these games. Not providing commercial access is understandable, but preventing institutional work to preserve these titles on top of that is actively destructive to video game history. We encourage ESA members like Nintendo to rethink their position on this issue and work with existing institutions to find a solution. So I think that's the larger point there, is that if Nintendo obviously commercially doesn't want these available, or it's not worth their time, allowing obviously some nonprofits in order to at least have a location to have them stored officially.
Right.
Just have them stored, have them available for researchers or people to come in. Like even like
a literal archive.
Yeah, a literal museum. Hey, it's a museum. You're only going to play them at this location or whatever. We get it. We have access to everything. You know what I mean? Like a Library of Congress sort of thing, just for video games.
Sure.
And I don't know what it would take to nudge Nintendo in that direction. I almost feel like it would take some sort of like someone to say to Nintendo directly, hey, here's a bunch of money to get you to change your mind, or you know, or something that gets them out of their sort of mold where
money is probably the answer. It's just how much.
But like that's the other thing is they don't need it. But maybe if they get, maybe if you said to Nintendo, this is how much. Like if you have someone say, how much does it cost you to operate these every year? Here's the fucking money.
Right.
Do it. But we don't know what it costs. We don't know what it costs to run these. We don't know what the cost. We don't know the man hours. We don't. We don't know what it costs to have the systems still in place or to pay out to all these devs on games that aren't getting bought anymore. We have no idea what all this stuff costs. We have no idea what it costs to send a check for a dollar. Like what behind the scenes, what that actually costs to have that in place. We don't know.
Sure.
So that's really the issue. And that's where I do agree with the History Foundation is that like we have to have some exceptions to this, to where it's not considered piracy.
Yeah. Yeah. There needs to be some sort of library system in place.
Because these libraries exist. It's not like these don't exist.
Right.
Like you can access, like I said, all these games are dumped. It's just that they're all underground, you know? So it would be great to have an official sort of source of that. But I don't know. Maybe they're the ESAs, Nintendo, they're all the large game companies and publishers. Maybe they're afraid of something weird happening with it. Yeah, we'll get closer, I think.
I think they just don't view it the same way a lot of us do. I think a lot of these companies still view this as
toys,
disposable toys. And I think Nintendo is smart enough to know that's not the case. But I have a feeling there's probably still a lot of old thinking at Nintendo that this is just toys.
Or they think that we'll devalue it so much even by letting, I don't know. It's yeah. Let's see what else is in this article here. Yeah, it's I don't know. I don't have a lot more else to say about it.
Nope.
But companies don't care. They don't care about preserving their history. They just don't care. Yeah.
Yeah. Pat, we have a Patreon.
We do.
How do you access it?
You go to patreon.com/CU podcast.
You go, you give us some money, we give you some stuff in return, you get the full video podcast, you get a monthly hangout, you get writing, I gotta get one of those up soon. We also do bonus bits, we talk about bears.
We talk about Hank the Tank.
One of the more enjoyable segments we've done. I enjoy our animal talk segments.
Ian and I don't ever butt heads on animals. Rarely on food either. We're on board with food and animals.
I'd say like 80% food, 95% on the animals.
Well, only 80% food?
I'm not huge on South Beach anymore.
Nachos are still great.
They've really taken tacos, kind
tacos,
of a slide.
Tacos went down and came back a little bit, but I'll get you back out to I'll get you back out there, Ian.
We can do Mitch's.
Nachos on me.
Mitch's is good. Yeah, and whatever else.
You got a Patreon poll.
Patreon poll.
Whatever else. The reason we're here.
The reason we're here.
In second place, what is so great about streaming 80s commercials? I had a typo there. 48%. Wow. And we're coming up 4 weeks away from my 100th commercial stream. And then hardest NES boss fights at 52%. This comes from a Den of Geek article that covers it, and I was nice enough, Ian, to take my time to put down videos for you to watch some of these boss fights, because I'm familiar with some of these.
I'm familiar with some of them, too, but not all of them. I have to find this Den of Geek article. It's not linked down the page.
It's literally right there.
Oh, it is?
It's really under 15 hardest NES boss fights.
Oh, shit, it is right there. Jeez, okay. Ian. Sorry. It's right there. Right there.
This is the author, Matthew Bird. From Vampires and Kingpins to Yellow Devils and Rogue Shadows, these are the 15 hardest NES bosses that terrorize our childhood.
You want me to start at number one?
Yeah. I still can't believe you did that.
I've done it multiple times.
You
Patrick.
Broke all protocol.
Multiple times I've done it.
You went right to one? Really?
Yeah.
That's what I remember. We've had a lot of fun in recent months looking at the history of some of the hardest games ever made, but it's hard to talk about the most difficult games of all time without giving a little love to the boss fights that often make them as challenging as they are. Okay, number 15, Ian.
Great Puma.
From pro wrestling.
This one I've actually encountered, and he is
a beast.
He is a fucking pain in the ass.
It's a beast.
I have beaten him.
So have I.
But it was very hard. The only time I ever got him, I think I beat him by count out.
Oh, you beat him by count. He went cheap.
I think I beat him by count out. I don't think I ever beat him by pinfall.
Oh, I beat him by pinfall. I took down the Great Puma. So the Great Puma probably has double the health of a regular wrestler.
Yeah.
And then really quick, and then wins so many more grapples than it should.
Oh, gets his moves off way too fast.
And can use, almost any special move in the game. That's right. I always forget about that. He can use any move.
Oh, yeah, that's how he can pull from everyone's moves.
Which doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. We don't know how much health each move takes off, but it is the guy who did Fire Pro, so he probably thought about some of those.
Sure.
But with Starman took down the Great Puma because one of the only characters that has a special move that's a running move, the flying elbow.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. So I love Starman. So I just would get him down finally, then hit that move. There.
Judge Doom from Who Framed Roger Rabbit is 14. I never made it to the end of that game, but the boss fight does look particularly fucking awful.
You have to load up that punch, right?
Yeah,
load him up and then like just hit him, then load it up again without getting hit. I'm looking at the video right now, right here at the end here. It has all the boss battles. It just looks like one of those sort of fights where you have to be close to perfect, and if you get hit. Your strength of your arm goes down, and he throws these things at you that you have to start all over again. So it just seems like a nightmare.
Doing,
you can't jump.
Doing what you need to do once doesn't look bad. It's the fact that you have to do it multiple times with no mistakes.
Because Doom spits these things at you, but also does a punch.
Yeah.
And it looks like, at least with the punch, you can time it, but with the spit, you won't be able to avoid something. It'll just hit you. Then you get him in the corner and just keep, it's like punching away until he falls down, and then you hit him with your little gun thing. And then that's it. But yeah, it looks like hell.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look fun. It doesn't look intuitive. Like, there's no pattern,
no.
Really. Okay, what's next? Machine Gun Willie from your favorite game, Double Dragon.
Hate this game, hate this boss.
I played this boss more in the arcade than on the NES. The NES, I always had difficulty getting to even halfway through the fourth stage. The arcade, this boss sucks in the arcade. Mows you down. I think it's like two shots, your health is gone, and like that's it, another quarter. Never beat it at Boatcraft Amusement Park. I ran out of money.
I know there's a way to cheese this boss fight, but I don't know how to do it. I remember using the Game Genie once to get to the fourth level and then get to this boss fight.
Oh, you could even get to the fourth level as a kid. It was tough.
I have, but like, I just remember doing it to try to beat the game.
It looks like, at least on this video, the cheese is jump kicking him as soon as he comes through the door, and you don't let him ever get down to run around. You keep him on the top.
Gotcha.
Keep him on the top. He'll still shoot you. You're gonna get shot no matter what. And then you get some hits, and then he comes down. He ducks most of your jump kicks. You can't do the pin down attack on him. He throws you off. It seems like you're gonna get hit no matter what. It's just making sure you zigzag in and out, serpentine.
Sure, serpentine.
And then after that, you got to take on your evil nemesis. Your brother.
Right.
You take on Jimmy, because remember, it's only a single player in the arcade. You fight the other person. That just seems like almost like a Puma thing where they're going to get their hits in. You better just make sure you spam and get some of them in and have enough health remaining.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just get up close, and because he'll headbutt you. Do the elbow. The elbow is the cheapest move in the game. The elbow is powerful, but it looks like he'll even jump over that and jump kick you. So, all right, what's next here, Ian?
Fester's Quest, the alien computer. This was one that I have never been to on my own because Fester's Quest is difficult. I like
zero,
the game.
Zero. I think I played Fester's Quest three times at my cousin. I don't have
it. It looks challenging. The video shows him cheesing it. That's really all I've got to say.
Cheating
on that
by
one.
Just standing in the middle and just shooting it real quick and using like an invincibility thing. It looks like I'm looking at the video here. It looks tough because there's these lasers in the middle that shoot really quickly. You need a wave gun, and then there's these little things up top that come out, these little balls that can come at you. It looks like at that point you have a powerful weapon with a missile that shoots all over. So it looks like you're cheesing it. It's still difficult, but it's still cheesing it. There. And it takes over 3 minutes for the boss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, this would be 2 minutes. That's still a long time for a boss when you're shooting it constantly. Let's see. What's next here?
The next one was, that wasn't, it was Needle Man. Mega Man 3's Needle Man. I honestly, I remember Needle Man being difficult, but I think picking any Mega Man boss is kind, like any regular boss is kind of cheap on the list, because they all have a weapon that's going to take them out pretty easily.
Even Needle Man? Let me see Needle Man here. Let me see. I'm not familiar with Mega Man that much. You know that. Let me see if what Needle Man's going through here.
It's because Needle Man's pattern isn't really, like they say in the article, it's not really random, but it's still, it's difficult enough to be a pain in the ass.
So they're using the little ray weapon that bounces off the wall. So this person is getting, just shooting it, and it's missing, and almost hitting it every time on the rebound. Yeah, he's doing his little needle attack, which hits you. It's like a long reach, and then fires from above. And that's a tough boss.
Yeah.
Because it tracks you, the needles. There's multiple needles. You got to keep moving away. Then if you get in close, you get wiped with the head attack. That looks like a tough boss, but this person still beat him in less than a minute. So, but it looks like you need that ray weapon to help.
Yeah. His weakness is the Gemini laser.
Okay. So that's a tough one. Okay. What we got next here on here? We have next. We have Toad Air Marshal from Bucky O'Hare. This is a little shooter stage, it looks like. Not familiar. Are you familiar with this boss?
No, I am not.
Okay, I'm clicking on the little link here. I'm going through it. It looks like it's not a short boss. It looks like it's a multiple stage boss. The first part's a little shooter where he tosses a little grenade at you, which explodes and comes up. It doesn't look like the worst thing, but it doesn't look easy at all. And there is fire in the background, but it does look super difficult right there. And then there's a boss. No, that's it. That's it. Okay. That doesn't look like the hardest thing. It doesn't look easy. That doesn't look the hardest thing.
I think they just say because it's a jarring change of pace. I also would have to wonder what the hitbox is like on your character.
You watching the video? It doesn't look horrible. It's a big hitbox on your character. It looks like you get to stay near the top of the screen. It's really the splash damage from the grenade that you have to watch out for, and you get your hits in. This doesn't look easy. I don't think this would be ultra challenging compared to some of the other ones, but okay. Maybe some people out there think this one is harder here. Okay. What we got next here?
This one I've actually been to, and I don't remember it being that hard.
I agree with this one. This one I was kind of shocked at, because even as a kid, me and my friend beat this, or by myself. I'm like, the final boss from Jackal.
It's long. Like, there's a lot to it, but I don't remember it being particularly difficult. You blow up a building, and there's a giant tank inside, and then you have to take out the tank.
Yeah.
And I'm even looking at the video now to make sure.
Not Hank the Tank. It wasn't Hank the Tank.
No, it wasn't Hank the Tank.
Okay.
But I'm looking at this video now, and it doesn't even look that hard.
I mean, it's...
The early part's a little much with all the stuff, but once you get to the tank, it's not... This was one of those games where, like, I'm not saying it was, you know, the easiest game in the world, but I was able to beat this game as a teenager, and I am not good at video games.
So there's little tanks on the ground that are shooting at you,
yeah,
and little people there, and then you have turrets firing at you that are tracking you. So it's one of those bosses where you have to constantly pay attention more to what's attacking you first before you attack that, and playing defense. But that's not
not unreasonable.
It's not unreasonable. No, it's not. And then you're right. Once you blow up the tower, you have a big tank appear. And honestly,
big tank isn't that big of a deal.
It looks tough, but honestly, I'd rather be focusing on just the one tank versus everything
ground. The second half is way easier than the first half. I do recall that.
It looks like if you lose the missile, you're kind of screwed because you have to get closer to it. But no, this isn't the most difficult thing in the world.
I love Jackal.
Jackal's a great game.
Jackal's fantastic.
Fell asleep during the first NES marathon.
Yes. Yes, he did.
And then your whistling woke me up. You didn't know I was asleep. I just literally woke up. I fell asleep for 20 seconds and woke up, and that was it. My five-hour energy kicked in.
Mr. Big in NARC is an absolute pain in the ass.
I don't know if I played that.
That game is a pain in the ass, though. Like, the entire game on the NES is a miserable mess.
I know. I remember renting that game and be like, what the hell did I get myself into?
Same.
Oh, yeah.
And using the Game Genie to beat it as well, because I realized that there was no playing this game for real. It's a four-button arcade game.
Yes,
which and instead of using like the start and the select buttons as additional buttons, which still would have sucked, they use a tap or a hold method for the NES game, and it sucks.
Which you get used to for the machine gun,
yes,
but for the jump thing, it's a little tough.
It sucks.
But that's about all you could do, though. Like, you can crouch and shoot the machine gun at the same time, but
awful fucking game.
I don't remember why the boss is hard, because it's just constantly going up. I think it goes up and down and just shoots at you constantly. Is that why?
Yeah, I just remember it being...
Just a pain in the ass.
Yeah, just a pain in the ass. Covers the screen in instant death projectiles.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, what's next we got here? We have...
Shadow Link.
Shadow Link.
Yes, difficult. You can cheese it, but if you're not cheesing it, it's very difficult.
Shadow Link is like one of the knights on steroids.
Yeah.
Where, like, the AI is just ratcheted up to another degree.
It's a pain in the fucking ass.
I remember, I think I beat it once when I was a kid, I believe. And it was one of those almost things where it was just determination and luck. I don't think I cheesed it. It was just like, just it's a mad scramble from what I remember. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's almost like you can't go up and try to like, try to gauge where the shield's going to be. You just got to like, try to go hit and come out. But that thing is fast and fierce. It's according to the article, Shadow Link's ability to mimic your movements and attacks makes him one of the most uniquely challenging enemies in this game, as well as in the history of the Zelda franchise. It's an incredibly erratic encounter that most players won't stand a chance of beating unless they take advantage of a particularly useful glitch. What is that? In the corner thing? You go in the corner?
Corner, kneel, and attack, I think, is what it is.
I'm trying to remember if that's how I cheesed it as a kid or not. The Technodrome in Ninja Turtles is tough.
Yeah, fuck that.
I beat it as a kid, but that's like...
Never.
The funny thing is, that's probably... It gets, once you get inside the Technodrome, it's hell on earth.
Yeah.
Never beat, I got the Shredder once as a kid and couldn't beat Shredder. Because as a kid, I didn't farm for the scrolls. It's really the scrolls is what makes that game beatable. And but I remember that Technodrome being bad. I probably wiped out at least two of my four turtles to get through that Technodrome. I mean, like, constantly switching.
Yeah, and this article says what I recall. There's no, like, good way to cheese it either. You just have to do it.
You just got to, like, there's a little, there's the lasers, there's the foot soldiers. Let me see the video real quick. I'm forgetting it. I haven't played. I should really try to beat Ninja Turtles since I never did it before. I did not put that one down here. But, yeah, the Technodrome sucks. Number five.
Yellow Devil. Yellow Devil's a pain in the ass. There is a pattern to it, and I've seen people who are really, really good at it. You can learn the pattern to the level, the Yellow
the
Devil.
Bricks?
Yeah, of how it, like, fires everything out, but it sucks, man.
Do you use the cheat to beat it, or will you pause it when it's on?
Yeah.
When you fire on, you do
yeah,
the pause?
That, I have.
That's like, what's amazing about that is that, why isn't that an end level boss? Like, why didn't they put that at the end of a stage? I guess they want to make sure that all the robot masters are...
Well, it's the Wily's Castle
boss. But I'm just saying, like, that's an impressive boss.
Yeah.
And also how it goes and reconstitutes itself. Like, it's a really good boss.
No, it's a really
cool
boss.
Look, I'm giving Mega Man credit.
Yep.
For the first game, end after three, then Jakkyo Ninja Gaiden is really tough. Jakkyo is tough because it's a three stage boss.
Yep.
And then it does replenish your health, I think, on the last one, I believe. That last boss, though, he flies around the top with the heat sinking orb that comes at you, whatever. You gotta like jump certain angles to avoid it and then go on the pedestals ahead. You gotta be top skilled. You can't cheese that, really.
Right.
You just gotta be skilled and keep moving. I did put that video down of that, didn't I? Did I not have to put that one down either? Yeah, no, I didn't, for whatever reason. That boss is tough as well. You don't get a moment to breathe, as it says here. Then Joker and Batman.
I've never made it that far because the game is very, very difficult all the way around.
Okay.
I do think he looks like a pain in the ass here. Mostly it's the fact that lightning takes so much fucking health from you. And his gun does too. Like, you're just dead in no time. So while there's definitely a pattern that you can follow here,
there is a pattern.
It's just one of those games where if you make a couple mistakes, you're fucked. Yeah, you can't mess it up.
I've only beat it with save states. So he fires a gun at you. The lightning comes down in rows. So you have to know the exact distance away. That I remember. You know the exact distance away of, like, you can kind of figure that out.
He can be cheesed. I mean, and it shows him being cheesed in this video with the batarangs and
going close.
Really, really close.
Going close. And you can still get hit. But, like, well, how's it not hitting him? Well, it's not a cheat on. It's just getting close. And he runs the other side. You get close and just battering.
But until you know to stay very close, that's like one of those things that's like a bug. The game wants you to have to deal with all of these fucking patterns and bullets.
Yeah. They want you to deal with the lightning and then the gun you can't duck, right? You have to jump over the gun.
Yeah. So if you want to play it on their terms, it's going to be difficult.
And the gun fires super quickly.
Fast. Yep.
So it's almost like one of those things you're going to take hits. Well, this person cheesed it, though. There you go. A lot of hits it takes, too. My God. It's like 100 hits before that. I think I cheesed it when I played it. Yeah, I got close. I don't remember jumping back. I remember the Joker staying in one area more so.
Mm.
Wasn't going back and forth. And I got close and was crouching and firing the batarangs. What's next here? We got number two.
Dracula, Castlevania 3. Castlevania 3 is a very difficult game. And Dracula's boss fights are usually pretty difficult too. I don't remember personally, and it's been a long time.
It's been a while.
There being anything that was particularly standout about the Dracula in Castlevania 3.
I never beat the third game. So
could be wrong.
The third one's one I never really got into. I just never, for whatever reason.
So I'll pass on judgment of that.
But so he fires these flames up from the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of, you see him coming. There is a warning. So you can avoid them. So I'm trying to think, like, where does it get? That's the first stage. Then it turns into this weird face monster that flies around, and then it fires straight down. That doesn't look too hard. And then then it falls apart. Then there's a third phase. Okay, this is called the phases. There's all these phases that are radically different than one another. The third phase is a statue shooting these beams, and there's platforms that go around, I guess you can jump on. But they're using the magician, whatever his name is, to fire the orbs. So, like, you're out of danger if you can switch to that character, it looks like. So that's the third stage. Okay. I mean, honestly, I never played this one. I would think Castlevania 1 looks harder than this. That's just me.
Right.
Because Castlevania 1, the things are constantly jumping around, and Dracula's like that.
Your jump has to be perfect, yes, to get over the fireballs.
This doesn't look like you need that level of perfection compared to the first game. At least to me. But you can say, Pat, you never played it. And number one, drum roll. Mike Tyson from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. This person said, it somehow feels right that Mike Tyson tops his list ahead of Dracula, the Joker, and various mythological monsters. Considering the former heavyweight champion was indeed the baddest man on the planet at the time of Punch-Out's release, one of the few fighters ever who brought the true final boss energy to the ring. There's no real trick to beating Mike Tyson. In order to overcome one of the toughest bosses in Nintendo history, you need to memorize his complex pattern and perfectly execute a complex series of dodges and punches that'll leave you feeling that you just went 15 rounds with the actual Mike Tyson. I don't disagree with this. And this is why.
Very difficult.
It was not just the fact that there's no cheesing Mike Tyson. Yeah, you can know the pattern's coming, but you still are going to get hit or have to block. You're going to take damage.
Yes.
You still have to dodge. You still have to have, I mean, like, the best reflexes of any NES game, like, arguably. You need to react in a tenth of a second. Like, it has to be that quick to dodge those uppercuts. Has to be.
Right.
So, like, you can't play it on LCD TV with even a tiny bit of lag. Depending on TV, you can't do it. It's also the intimidation factor. Holy shit, it's Mike Tyson, and when you come into it, you don't know what to expect. So I can guarantee you, no one on the planet beat Mike Tyson the first time they faced him. Like, that would,
no, absolutely not.
That would be an impossibility to me, unless you were a genius that knew that, you know, the one hit fucking deaths were coming for the first 90 seconds of the first round. I've seen people not get past that ever. Not get past that. Not be able to have the reflexes to get past those uppercuts that take off your entire, for the first round to just put you down for the count.
They're so quick.
Yeah. You get a flash for, literally, it's like so over. Like, I can't, it's hard for me to think of another NES game where you need that much reflexes in order to beat a game like that. Not a robot master. You need to be that quick.
Yeah.
I remember playing Super Spy Hunter for the book, and, like, you had to be really on the ball. But, like, I don't think it was like this.
Super Spy Hunter?
That's like a shooter.
Yeah.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, this is it. This is the game. So, yeah. I don't disagree with that.
All right. Well, thank you, Den of Geek.
And thank you for voting it.
Yeah.
Out there on the Patreon.
Fun. I like doing these listicles.
We got voice messages.
Oh, do we?
Go to anchor.fm/CU podcast. You go, you leave a voicemail, no money involved. I mean, if you want to send us a tip, you can do that. Send us a little Patreon, but we got some questions, and here you go.
Hey, Pat and Ian, I know you're both wrestling fans, and it seems like there's only a tiny handful of pro wrestling games that are actually good. The main problem, in my opinion, is that wrestling games are designed like fighting games, where all these contingencies need to be made for it to simulate what we see on TV. Also, these games have evolved, but the core gameplay still comes down to who wins matches. In reality, win-loss records are a relatively minor detail in pro wrestling. Having the right combination of athleticism, charisma, and aesthetics, building rapport with the audience, and nurturing relationships with the right people backstage is what really matters. Do you think those types of aspects could be captured in a modern pro wrestling game if we threw out the tried-and-true fighting game-type formula? What do you think?
I don't know, because then you're admitting that it's staged and it's not a traditional sport. And wrestling games, for the most part, treat it like it's real, like it's a reality.
Right. You It would be difficult, but I do think there is a place for that type of game, and there is a well-made. I've never put it into action and played it, but I've read the rule book a number of times, and it gets good reviews online. Worldwide Wrestling is a pen and paper RPG that fully embraces all aspects of that. When you fight, you work a match. Like, you work the match, you coordinate to get the ratings up. There's backstage stuff. There is stuff that happens to you in your personal life that's outside of your character life. It's a really interesting
contract stuff. Things
yeah,
like that.
There's it's a really interesting game with a really like cool rule set, and I think you could probably successfully play it with about six people. And there's the GM duties rotate, so everyone gets to play a wrestler, okay, but the GM and the announcer kind of play the same role as you're officiating the match.
There's actually an announcer. Someone's gonna like say like, hey, this is the match.
So basically the wrestlers decide what they're going to do, and then the announcer is the one who basically puts it into action and says exactly what's happened, does die roll and stuff like that. It's neat.
So the WrestleMania rumors are trying to get Stone Cold back for a match. That's the rumor.
Jesus.
Hey guys, love this show. I got a question for Ian. Sorry to make it depressing, but you've been very open about your mental health in the past. And so my question for you is that hundreds, maybe thousands of viewers and listeners think to themselves, I need help, but the idea of talking to a stranger is a little too scary to them. So what would your advice for that person be?
I mean, I hate to say it, but that's just one of those things that kind of is part of the first step is getting over that fear of talking to someone. If you think that there might be a person that you're better suited to talk to, for instance, when I was younger, I had a good relationship with my general practitioner. So I spoke with her initially about the mental health problems sure. that I was having because I'd been seeing her for so long. And while that wasn't her area of expertise, she knew me well enough that she knew where to kind of point me in the right directions to go. I also think if you are concerned about, you know, speaking to a doctor or medically about it, therapy is something that has helped me. There are a lot of places that will do. And this is one of those things where I would actually, I have a little trepidation because I've never really done it to start off. But I think this is one of those areas where the rise of telehealth could very much help someone.
Oh, sure.
It's not a big
commitment.
Yeah. Right. Now, you're going to have to go, and especially if you go to a psychiatrist or something, if you might end up on some medication, you're going to have to go see a psychiatrist. They're going to want an in-person, mm-hmm. you know, appointment at some point. Take some blood work, you know, your height, weight, get those tests and you know, get a full picture of you. But eventually, you can move on to that. I moved on to telehealth for most of my appointments, and honestly, it took a doctor that I wasn't super comfortable seeing in person and made the experience a lot better by being able to do it on the telephone. So I think that's
Zoom.
Yeah. So I think that's where you should look look at what's available to you locally and then ask about their telehealth options so you can do it from the comfort of your own home. I got to tell you, doing those appointments with Spike in my lap definitely makes things a lot easier.
And then the one thing to understand about it is that everyone has these sort of issues.
Right, absolutely.
Even if they're not vocalized. And publicly, so there's no shame in having mental health issues. That's the thing. There's always a stigma attached to it when you should treat it like any other general, you know, physical health issue. That's the thing. Like we have to look at it the same way. It's like having, you know, it's like having a sprained ankle. It's just, but it's in your head. That's it. It's still something that has to, you know, something that has to be addressed. And there's no shame in having it addressed the same way you would when there's no shame in addressing, you know, like a cavity in your tooth. You know, you have someone help you with it. It's the same thing. And I think that's the first step, realizing that it's not something to be ashamed of. Like, everyone has, you know, mental health issues to some extent. Absolutely. What's the next one here?
Hey, y'all. Joseph from Richmond, Virginia here. Did your parents ever buy you a game that they shouldn't have at the time? My mom bought my brother and I as young children Conker's Bad Fur Day because she thought it was the sequel to Banjo-Kazooie and didn't understand the rating system. And she also bought my brother... Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball when he was 14 because he is gay, and she was hoping that it would convert him to be straight. And we laugh about it today and call it Dead or Alive Extreme Gay Conversion Therapy. Thank you.
Well, I guess you got more enjoyment out of it out of that press. It's wow. Okay.
Jeez. My parents, I don't think really ever. I mean, it's like, what is appropriate? My parents were, though, like, kind of picky as a kid. It was funny. Like, Mortal Kombat was like a thing. They were like, we're not buying that for you. But my dad also came home with Doom 2 and was like, let's all sit down and play some Doom 2. Like, it's just what your parents say. Like, you realize parents just make it up as they go along.
No, for me, I can give you a laundry list of movies I shouldn't have seen.
Sure.
With my father, especially in the theater. My father took me to see violent-ass movies and rented them all the time. Fortunately, I don't think it screwed me up to the extent that it could have. But there's no way I should have been watching Predator when I was 7 years old. Like, literally watching this stuff as soon as I come out and
finish it.
And then going to see and RoboCop, which scarred me as a kid.
Oh, RoboCop is not
that
a movie for
children.
That
scarred me as a kid, RoboCop. Yeah. I can't believe that. And then, like, going to see Lethal Weapon 2 in the theater. Like really violent movies. Absolutely. Next one.
Hey, Batman, from Portland. I was just wondering if you guys ever considered Spy versus Spy for the NES as probably one of the first roguelikes, because I was actually playing it the other day, and the maps are random, where the atoms are random, and I just felt like, I was like, wow, this is pretty much a roguelike.
It's roguelike would be like a randomized map, wouldn't it?
I get what he's saying, because there's randomized elements, but not everything that has some randomization is a roguelike or even a roguelite. The gameplay is just so out of the ordinary different that because one of the other main things about roguelikes, in addition to the randomized dungeon, is the nature of pretty much all of them give you one chance to run through something.
Oh, okay.
You get one chance.
Okay.
And then, you know, some roguelites are kind of the ones where you can, you know, when you die, you'll get money that'll save that you can use to purchase upgrades that'll help you in your next run. But you're almost always starting over from scratch in some way, shape, or form to get through a roguelite. So a roguelite. So no, I wouldn't consider it one. But I understand his train of thought. I understand the train of thought.
Hey, Pat and Ian, my name is Andy. I'm just from outside Chicago. I just want to thank you guys for many years of podcasting, videos, all that great stuff. You guys, along with James Rolfe and other guys in the community, got me through a lot of dark times in my life to help me appreciate myself, especially an abusive ex-wife who didn't appreciate me being a gaming collector, nerd, Ninja Turtle fanatic, etc. But thankfully, it's been almost 10 years since I've been away from her, and I've been in a great marriage with my current wife and 3-year-old son. My quick question is, if there was a startup sound you could have to your video game console, what would it be?
What would your startup sound be to a console?
It'd be Spike yelling.
Does Spike actually yell?
Yeah. Yeah, he yells at night.
Or like a velociraptor?
Yeah, he meows real loud. So yeah, I would actually probably.
Does he meow for food or just for attention?
I think he just, you know, he gets up in the middle of the night. He's cranky. Old. He doesn't know exactly what's going on.
Where am I? Who's
needs to yell for a little bit. Yeah.
Startup sound. Was anything on here I can do here?
What?
That'll be my startup sound. You still don't know what that is.
No.
That's so funny.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Joe from Orlando. I have a question for both of you, and please forgive me if you've already had this question. Were there any ad campaigns growing up that you vividly remember and may have made you purchase a specific game or console? I still remember the Genesis Does campaign, and I actually sold my NES along with 20 games to get a Sega Genesis with Sonic 2, a decision I was really happy with at first, but I would later regret years later. The advertising definitely had an impact on me, and I can still remember all of the commercials by heart. Thanks, guys. Take care.
None that I think really made me like go out and buy a game, but I will never forget Mortal Monday.
Oh, no one forgets that dumb kid.
Yeah, I'll never
yelling
forget
in the street.
Yeah, I'll never forget Mortal Monday.
Little brat. No one forgets that kid.
So,
the TurboGrafx 16 commercials were, I think, very influential in me wanting the system. Obviously, knowing about it, there's no other way I would know about a TurboGrafx 16.
Right.
Besides the circulars, but like those were very influential. Whenever they started running, it was like summer of Summer of 89. Those were Those were big. All right, do a few more here.
Hey, guys, it's Quick Man from the northeast of the UK. Thanks. Just wanted to say congratulations on 300 episodes. It's been a long ride.
It's been a while.
My question is, what fighting game characters do you really like the appearance of personally
what? Whoa.
The whole character, but you just absolutely cannot stand playing as?
So I think
the question was, what fighting game characters do you really like the look of that you cannot stand playing as?
Okay. The look of.
Generally, I like a lot of the grappler characters in fighting games, the way they look, the big characters. I think partially because, so like Potemkin in Guilty Gear, Big Band in Skullgirls, Geef in Street Fighter.
King.
Yeah, I like King
King's
a lot.
King's awesome.
But I am really, really bad with any fighting game character that's a grappler, because they generally have the full circle throws of the joystick and stuff like that.
You can mess people up with King if you know how to do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I'm generally not very
Northern
good
Lights,
with
Northern Lights, suplex, German suplexes, powerbomb.
I got halfway decent with Zangief in 4, maybe. But that's probably the best I've ever done.
Well, he was tough to use in the original because he was so slow and couldn't jump.
Yeah.
And I still, to this day, can only do the spinning pile driver like one out of like 8 or 9 times. For some reason, the mechanic escapes me on the timing of everything without him doing a regular suplex or someone else. Zangief has so many, even the original game has so many. There's like 7 different things he can do. There's a little power bomb. He can bite you. You can do vertical suplex. Throw over the shoulder. They're all nuanced things with the controller that weren't documented in the manual. But like the 360 pile driver, you'd be like perfect on the timing to not jump. Like that's one that always, one I couldn't get.
Yeah, tough stuff.
Tough stuff.
Tough stuff.
All right, next one.
Hey, Pat. This is Richard calling from Bronx, New York. Bronx. You mentioned on your podcast that you haven't seen Taken of Pelham 1, 2, 3.
Okay, I gotta stop real quick. I confused that with the Carpenter one about the police station. I confused them. Taking Pelham 1, 2, 3 is the one where they take over the train.
Yeah.
And I did see a lot of that with Walter Matthau, the original one. And then they did the remake with Travolta and Denzel Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But I did see a part of it with Matthau before I cut you off. And that's Matthau, you can watch it anything. But go on, Richard.
Just telling you that 1974 version is one of my favorite movies of all time. Actually, I worked for the New York City subway. I actually had Kaz Dalowitz's old job there at Grand Central Tower. And we quote that movie on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's a great movie if you never saw it.
Nope.
I guess I haven't seen it all, but I've seen enough where I'm like, this is a gritty 70s sort of movie with Matthau as the guy running the subway sort of stop. Yeah, he's the guy talking to the terrorists on the train. And then again, Travolta, they made the terrorists. One of the last Travolta things where he was like a leading man in a movie. That was Bald Travolta stage.
Travolta.
The last stage of Travolta.
Gotti Travolta.
Before, no, that was Rug Travolta.
Yeah.
All right, do like 2 more.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Rick Pasley here from Rensselaer, Indiana. I have a great question for both of you. If WWE 2K22, let's say it flops, what would happen?
No, but I don't think these games ever flop because all the fanboys buy these games every year. So
I don't think you have to worry about it flopping. What will happen is it could absolutely be a critical nightmare, but as long as it sells to the fanboys, they'll keep them going. But I do think there is a big chance.
Big
chance that this has got a good pop on that one. That this will be a fucking nightmare.
Because it's a new engine.
It's a new engine, but that's the problem. The Ukes engine or engines like the Ukes engine have just been for so long how wrestling has gone that if they try to reinvent the wheel, I don't think it's going to go super well.
Well, they can probably do a similar gameplay engine.
But I have a feeling it's just going to look like the Ukes engine. But
yeah.
Buggy? I don't know. What I heard about how bad the code looked, essentially, after years and years of 2K and Ukes kind of cobbling it together.
15 years of cobbling together, more than 15 years.
It was a nightmare. So it'll be interesting to see if they really do have a fresh engine.
Yeah, they keep hacking stuff. So eventually, like, this is falling apart. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, Ronda Rousey's arms waving around. And people falling through the rings, and you can't have that.
Jericho's brain leaving his skull.
Was that one?
I think that was one of
the brains
yeah.
were in there.
Or it was like the face comes off. Yeah, the face comes off.
I mean, come on. You want to check in with someone else?
Yeah, might as well.
Hey, Tommy here. Just going for a little hike with my shirt off. Figured it would be good to, I don't know, clear my head and maybe even give me some kind of understanding of certain people. Why they might stab me in the back like this. You know, it's like, you can't do enough to some people. It doesn't matter how many times you give them a ride in your Ferrari. Just, you can turn around one day all of a sudden and just one day, boom, boom. It doesn't mean anything anymore. It's like, you know, not for nothing. My time is really valuable and shit. Oh, man, I swear to God. If I throw up in the middle of another fucking voicemail. Oh, Pat, by the way, I don't know if anybody told you, but this past podcast isn't showing up on iOS, so, you know. Get it together, man. You're embarrassing yourself.
Oh, okay, yeah, thanks. I didn't realize it wasn't coming up on iTunes.
Was he being swarmed by mosquitoes?
I don't know. Was that, I heard construction in the back. I heard a highway in the background.
Yeah.
I like sort of pensive, philosophical... hiking Tommy there. That was interesting. Without a shirt. I don't know who would want to create content without a shirt. Someone desperate, but anyway.
Right.
Thanks so much for that. I like that. I like that that version of Tommy.
Yeah, it was great. It was wonderful.
That's it for the podcast, Ian.
That's it. We're done.
We're done for good.
We're done.
An hour 40. A little bit lower than usual. We'll get the time down, but the intros go long. But, you know.
Yeah.
We got to talk about prairie dog killing scumbags. So there you go.
That's right.
You got to do that.
We do.
More and more. Point that out more and more. We're going to be at the SoCal Gaming Expo in Ontario, California.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. We're going to get your Korean barbecue eating that we like probably one night.
Maybe.
For sure. The Yoshi will be there.
Maybe.
And others. And others. We'll probably see Andre.
Oh, we'll see Andre.
Alex and Gerard will be there.
Nice.
It'll be a gay old time, as I say in the Flintstones.
Our pal Eric will be there from Retail Archaeology.
Oh, he will.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. We're going to have to get a reservation. There. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll see you later, everyone.
All right, bye.
Have a good week.